Welcome to This Shifting Moment. This is a podcast in which we're seeking a profound shift in the way that we react to things. We do that through weekly discussions and twice weekly readings and responses from some of the great thinkers and spiritual writers.
And my name is Richard, and I'm a spiritual coach and a mindfulness teacher with over 20 years of experience in treatment and private practice.
And my name is Josh, and I'm an ordained pastor and a writer with a history of directing spiritual communities.
We want you to be a part of everything that we do. We look forward to hearing your thoughts and suggestions. Please contact us at 424-341-3860 and follow us on This Shifting Moment on Instagram and Facebook.
Just now, when we were talking about the finance stuff and everything, I think that could be a really fascinating topic to kind of go through with people. Because, again, I don't think there's a lot of spiritual podcasts out there specifically dealing with, like, what do we do? Because I'll tell you, I was just thinking about this the other day. It's not even something I've expressed to even my sponsor or to, like, therapist or anything. But just, like, how a lot of my drinking early on, I remember, you know, being a pastor, you don't make a ton of money, right? So I remember, like, early on in that process, realizing that I was going to have to live simply. And that was sort of that was something that was conveyed to me by my father, who's done this profession for a very long time. And that was something that I kind of embraced. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I will live simply. And what that meant is maybe not making more than a teacher's salary, maybe learning how to stretch a dollar, all that kind of stuff. If you want to do this work for a living, that's kind of what you do. And that's a, you know, Christian perspective. There's tons of ways to do this in different ways, and there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. But there, at this point in my life, I was living in that simplicity. And then I remember when alcoholism came in, it destroyed my ability to live simply, because there's no way to live simply when you're living in outblown alcoholism. So, you know, credit cards, debt, all of that stuff happened because of, honestly, it's just impulse spending. You're drunk, you're out, you're buying alcohol when you don't have the funds to do that. When I really went through it, I was unemployed. And so I was still paying money on credit cards just to support that habit for, like, you know, 6 months or whatever. So there's a lot of that I had to wake up to getting sober. That was the scariest part about getting sober, was looking at my bank account, like having the courage to actually log in and remember my password. Because for so long, I just wouldn't want to look, right? It was so frightening. And
it was just... It was the same with me. I didn't have any money. I was a drummer in a band playing in bar bands.
Right.
You know, and I remember many nights where I'd get up the next morning and they go, you know what? We've just been told that we have to go play a gig for free because you drank your way in. You drank all of our profits.
Wow. Yeah.
I just drank and I didn't open my bills when I got home. I can tell you I was even sober for 10 years and I still wouldn't open my bill.
Totally. Well,
I didn't want to know how troublesome it was, because I was so afraid that if it was too bad, I would pick up a drink and I would just, like, check out.
Totally.
And today I have to live differently. I mean, I work in the recovery industry, you know, and the recovery industry doesn't pay a lot, but it gives a lot back, because we're out there giving to other people. You know, I'm kind of an anomaly because I am fairly successful many years. But the thing about it is I don't do it for the money. I do it because I have this sense of lack coming from inside of me that in a moment's notice will cause me to not feel good enough about myself.
So you keeping in this work keeps all of that.
This work keeps me in check. Because I have to realize that I've been given a gift, and the gift is a healthier relationship with me.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And that's something that people don't necessarily gravitate towards when we're in early recovery. Like my early recovery was filled with these ideas of, well, I've not been making money my whole life, so now let's figure out how to make the most money I can and do all that. And then quickly you realize, like, okay, yeah, if you're a rational and smart human being, there is the potential for you to make, you know, some good money in life. And that's not a bad thing. But then the other thing is, if you're an individual that's highly sensitive and you're prone to addiction, you're prone to that kind of stuff, you can make that money, that bottom line, the new addiction, and it's so easy to just go towards greed, yep. towards, you know, yep. lack of empathy, and you're hurting people along the way. And then before you know it, you're in the same sort of moral destitute place you were on exactly. the addiction side of things. And I think that's why it's so amazing that there's a Debtors Anonymous to kind of yeah. help with that sort of, you know.
And I love hearing people creating visions for their lives and kind of honoring those visions and being mindful about their finances. I mean, the beautiful thing about Debtors Anonymous, we got on this topic and I just love it because I've started kind of exploring. I've developed a friendship with somebody in New York City and they have got me, I'm sure she's listening to the podcast because she listens to it all the time, but it's been really eye-opening for me because it's caused me to take a look at things that I wasn't looking at things before, and I hear messages that I hadn't heard before, and I've been around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time, but this is different because there's a different spiritual quality that comes through in the messages of people like honoring their visions and taking chances and you know, preparing themselves to take mindful chances and doing the work around it so that they can live, to me, when we get clean and sober, this is about living a living life, you know, having a life. Yeah. And if we've got this one area of our lives that we can't seem to manage, our capacity for living our life is going to be limited. And we're going to always be living, to me, and I did this myself because I know this for sure, we're going to always be living in fear. We're going to always be living in lack. And so, I like the nice things in life, but I have to pay attention. Is it reasonable? Is it responsible?
Yeah, and that's the question you don't ask when you're in active addiction, right? There's no committee going on. Like, is this a responsible act? Like,
I don't give stop a shit. And again, it's having, you know, we come back to the values. You know, we come back to we live in the values that we talked about in one of our earlier episodes. Is this a responsible choice that I'm making?
I think it would be worth it to throw, there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast. I think it'd be worth it to throw it out to our listeners to say, if there's a financial advisor or someone who handles this and does this for a living, we would love to talk with you. Maybe not online and everything, but we would love to have a conversation because I think there's so much hurt and so much pain around people who are trying to get their lives together specifically over this issue. And it's danced around, you know, I mean, go get a sober job, go get that. You know, there are all sorts of things that we don't name it, though, which is like, you might have to work your ass off to get out of debt. And that's not a fair thing because all of that happened in addiction, but you got to do it anyway. Right. So how do you get the support? Right. Yeah.
And it's really important to have other people that have been through that to be able to help talk you through it. And I think one of the things that I had to do, you know, I mean, I remember early in my recovery, I had to get a consolidation loan. I had to get it all, I had to get it all consolidated, you know, and be, so I could look at the whole thing and this is the one check that I write every month for this. And I needed to know how much I needed to set aside so that I could be responsible in paying back that consolidated debt. Because if I had this bill and this bill and this bill and this bill, I lost, I mean, I couldn't conceptualize how much I needed to have in order to cover myself every month. And so I needed to have it all in one place. I was too distracted. I was, whether I was ADD or anxiety or whatever, because I would pay my bills and then, oh my God, this, I forgot about this one.
That's it. Well, it occurs to me too. Okay, so I'll be fully honest here. These things stress me out more than anything, right? Like, so talking money, just it might as well be laced with chloroform. It will knock me out as soon as you start talking about money, right? So I'm mindful of the podcast listener right now who's like me, who's going to listen to this and go, well, fuck this. I've got tons of debt and I'm not going to listen to something that's going to trigger me. I think the outside of that is, this isn't a conversation to scare you. I think what it is like, can you for me, the first step into actually taking a look, I loved how you said that, Richard, because that's something that you named something I've never heard named before, which was that phenomenon of I'm sober, but I'm walking in and I'm not looking at those bills. I'm not opening those things up because I don't want to see that. I don't want to trigger myself. I don't want to get involved. And I think that's the exact thing someone listening to this podcast with these financial worries right now is going, well, I don't want to listen to this because I'm dealing with it, right? Or I'm too scared to look at it. The first thing for me to get into that space, if I'm going to log into my account, I'm going to take an honest inventory and look at everything, was just like saying that out loud to someone. And it was my wife, and that was really easy for me, but there may be a partner that you have. There may be like a friend that you could do that. But just to say, I'm really scared about this. I don't even have the words to put it into place. I just know it's one of the most fearful things I have. Would you do this with me, or would you just hold me accountable? Would you check in with me afterwards?
I love it that you're saying that, because I have a lady friend that lives down the street from me. And when I first got sober, she wanted me to be sober really bad, because we had become estranged, our friendship, and we'd been friends for a very long time. And so I remember early on in my recovery, I asked her, I said, I have to pay my bills, and it's not a comfortable time for me. Would you mind coming and sitting with me while I pay my bills? I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing. She would come over with me all the time and just sat there with me.
Wow.
Because I wanted to make sure that I was addressing it right, that I put a stamp on it.
Right.
Because it was so overwhelming to me that I couldn't do the basics. In fact, I had to have her come over and sit with me while I opened up my mail. And we set a time frame, we set a structure around it, and there was a day during the month that, okay, Richard, it's time to be responsible. It's time to pay your bills. Mm. If I had a tax bill come in the mail, it freaked me out. I didn't want to open it. And so I had to have her come over with me while I opened the tax bill. I couldn't do anything around money. I just really couldn't do anything around money, because it was so triggering and so uncomfortable for me. And I had to have somebody that wouldn't make me feel guilty and shameful about my fear around money. And she didn't judge me.
Yeah. How beautiful is that?
And to me, I think we can have that conversation. Yeah. It's okay to have a conversation with somebody and say, this is a really scary thing for me, and I don't want to go backwards.
Yeah.
I want to go forwards, and I need your help in this area. And it's really emotional for me. I have a lot of shame around it. I have a lot of guilt around it. And not only that, but more than anything, I had a lot of avoidance around it.
Yeah, avoidance and resistance are the two key things there, I think, because that's what I've run into, and I'm sure a lot of other people have too, where it's that feeling of it's the unknown. Like, that IRS letter is the perfect. I don't know what's in there. I don't know what number's gonna be in there. I don't want to know, right? So I'm gonna leave that as long as I can. But then the problem only gets exacerbated because we haven't dealt with our issue, and that's an addiction thing, right? Like, I'm addicted to being in control, and so if I open that letter, I'm giving up my control. I'm giving up the illusion that I don't have to pay that for some reason, because that's all it is. You're gonna have to pay it. Like,
because I kept going back to, well, this is my money. I earned it. Oh, I worked for this money. Right. And so it was hard for me to conceptualize that. And so gradually over time, some of those things started cleaning themselves up. And I just had to be patient and focus on doing the next right thing. And my feeling is, if there's anybody out there, I mean, this is the holiday season.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really important to pay attention to what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. And like I just said, If I didn't have the money to pay for it, I don't pay for it right now.
Yeah. And your spiritual practice will help ground you in that. And I think that's the most sort of rewarding thing about this whole thing, is that the same principles that we're using to keep our lives on track in terms of sobriety or emotional sobriety or just mental health, those can help us too when it comes to the finances, because we're building a life we want to show up for. And so once we do that, like, I'm willing to step into hard situations and do difficult things because the life I have is so worth it. Like, I want this thing to work. So I'll open that IRS letter, even though it might kill me, right? I think that really is. And then the more we do that, the more exposure we get to that, the less and less those things freak us out. Like, I have a I have a mentor who's a base jumper. I think I've talked about him before in different, you know, ways, but he's a base jumper for this team called Team Ill Vision. So check them out if you want to. They jump off of things for a living. So literally high things, they go and they find mountains, they find buildings, they find all this stuff.
Oh, no way.
And, yeah, I know. And he has all these crazy stories of, you know, jumping out of helicopters in Siberia and jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge and, you know, just crazy things that he plans these things. Then he goes and he films it and he does it. But what's really interesting is he told me that, you know, he'll fly in these like squirrel suits that are, you know, like a Superman thing, and then he'll jump. And my question to him was like, what, have you ever gotten to a point, like you got up to the thing and you just looked at it and you're like, okay, this one is a bridge too far. Like, this is too high. It's too whatever. And he said, no, because the fear of jumping is exactly the same if I'm jumping off of, like, you know, a 20-foot building or if I'm jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, it doesn't exacerbate the height I get. It's the same feeling inside of me. I just have to make the choice to go and jump. And the crazy part about that, that it sort of unlocked in me, was that that's so true. Like, it's not... If my finances are scaring me, it's scaring me just as much as it did to admit that I was an alcoholic and try and get sober. That bravery energy still moves in the same direction and can still save me in that direction. I just have to make the choice to go jump off that blank, right, whatever that is, that IRS letter, that whatever it is. And I can do that, you know, with help. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that when we remain isolated and in our own heads, I think your story is perfect, because before you called that friend, I'm scared, right? I'm sitting at this
table.
I'm
scared. And I could see that stuff piling up. And I just knew that to me, it was like, you know, what are the consequences going to be if I don't attend to this? What are the consequences going to be to me if I pick up a drink? It's the same. So, you know, I pick up a drink, I have consequences to picking up a drink. If I don't pay my bills, if I don't make financially responsible choices. And this is the holiday season. And for me, making financially responsible choices today means that after the holidays are over, I'm not going to feel like shit.
That's right. Yeah. It's almost like a financial hangover. You don't have to have
like,
that.
It's like, yeah. Do I want to enjoy the holiday season and know that I'm going to feel like I made responsible choices, or do I want to feel like shit after the holiday season? And I don't know about you, but today I don't really want to feel like shit after the holiday season, because
it's, guess what? When it's over, it's just over and nobody cares. I mean, that's the crazy part. January like 5th, nobody's thinking about what happened over the holiday, all of that kind of stuff.
No, I think
that's also sort of great thing to think about if you've blown it in one of those situations too. Because one of the big sort of things that pushed me into actually getting help and going to treatment was a bad Christmas. I blew it up, right? And then I went to treatment. But for years have thought, oh, everyone is just still holding on to that Christmas where I made an ass of myself and fell asleep early.
Nobody.
And this is my family. These are the people who could keep tabs on it. They don't care, and they're not thinking about it. Like, no one is as wrapped up in their own fear as you are.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, if there's anybody out in the audience today and they've just gotten back from a horrible shopping trip where they spent like a ton of money, my suggestion would be, try not to be hard on yourself. This is a process.
Give
yourself some grace. This is not about doing it perfectly. The key here is the more we beat up on ourselves for having made those bad choices, the more we're likely to go back out there and make bad choices.
That's
that instant gratification that we get from doing more of what we know we shouldn't be doing. And so start from today, start from where you are today and make that commitment tomorrow to be able to make the more responsible choices for yourself, you know, and don't be afraid to ask for help. To me, that's what this part of the spiritual work is we never have to do this alone. There are people out there that will help us. And sometimes we have to do a little bit of work and have a conversation with somebody and say, you know what, I have this area in my life that's difficult for me. And maybe you can offer to help them through something difficult. It can be mutual. Everybody has their own challenges, you know?
Well, and that's, I think the Lord's Prayer talks about this, because that word for sin is actually debt. So the word for sin and debt in most religious cultures is actually the exact same word. In Hebrew, it's the same word. So sin and debt mean the same thing. So a lot of times when you're reading something, you think I'm a awful human being. No, actually, it's financial. So like a lot of the sin stuff that Jesus was dealing with on a regular basis was actually financial. Like people couldn't pay the dues to get into the temple, and so they couldn't be cleansed, and they couldn't be clean, and then they couldn't be forgiven. So really what sin meant was you couldn't afford to take care of the brokenness in you, right, from a spiritual perspective. But what he came to do was to blow the lid off of that, and the Lord's Prayer is the perfect example of that. It's forgive us our debts as we forgive those who've debted against us. So that basically means, like, generosity is the key to getting out of this hole. So it might not be financially that you're giving money away, but what it means is, how can you forgive others the way that you would like to be forgiven in terms of your own debts, in terms of your own financial stuff? So what can you do to help others to free yourself from that? And that really comes back to what we learn in Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff, which is service is really the key out of your own head and out of your own problems and into like a new life. And that's a generosity. That's being generous. So
it's funny because I don't think we've ever really mentioned the word Alcoholics Anonymous on the podcast.
Oh, that's funny.
We've always talked about recovery, but I guess, you know, I guess everybody gets it. So
we'll bleep it.
It is what it is. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, if we want to build up our own sense of self, it comes from helping others, you know. And if you're walking away feeling a little bit difficult about some of the choices that you've made, you know, this year or this month or today or yesterday or this week or whatever, part of our work and feeling good about ourselves is to go out and lend a hand to somebody else who might be struggling, whether it's emotion, they might not be struggling in the same way, you know, but it is the holiday season. And people do struggle with loneliness and stress and anxiety during the holiday season. And this is a good time to go out and, you know, offer to spend some time with somebody and if that you know might be lonely, you know. And one of the things that I learned, too, is like, you know, I struggled a lot with finances during my early years in recovery. And I remember going to my AA sponsor and I asked him, I said, what do I do about this? And you know what he told me to do? He said, get a treasury commitment at an AA meeting.
That's a brilliant idea.
I looked at him and I go, I can't do that. I'll take the money. Because I really, in my head, I firmly believe in my head that I would like skim
totally
off
steal
a little,
that. Right.
skim a little bit off the top or whatever. It's like if the minute I start intermingling the meeting's money into my bank account, it's like I can't. I literally told him, I said, I don't think I could be responsible.
I can't be trusted with that. Right.
And he said, well, what a great way to learn how to be responsible. And that's when I saw everything starting to shift.
Wow. But I mean, what an incredible sort of trim tab pivot thing for you, because like it's the same thing. Like if you look at that from the perspective of, you gave me that gift with the ownership over this like podcast to say, even though I was in a really shitty spot in life, to go, hey, why don't you run this podcast with me? You know, that kind of an opportunity gave me the chance to go, oh, well, if Richard trusts me like with this, then maybe I can get shit together in other areas. Maybe like I can hold it together in other aspects of my life. And now when I look at my life, I've got, you know, my marriage is back, I've got a child, I've got a career, I've got things moving, you know. And that's all because someone gave me the permission to do something that honestly a lot of people said don't do that, you know. Like
I had people call me up and they go, what are you doing this with Josh? How you're long time sober, he's a drunk.
Just so people know, I went to an event last night and there were people there who were in that phase of life that like Richard knew me in, and I hadn't seen them since then, and they were lit. It's like they saw a ghost. They were literally shocked to see me alive and sober and all that stuff. And I think that's a testament though to like at every other person probably would have said, Josh needs zero responsibility right now. He just needs to like shut up, show up, and just do whatever. But for me, that wasn't ever going to work. And I think that's that's what's so beautiful about someone who cares about you guiding you through this recovery process, is that they will look at it and they will go, actually, for Richard, it might work better like this. Or actually, for Josh, it might work better like this. We just don't know. And I think, you know, in terms of how we can be generous to someone, like literally, the only way you can really know that is by getting to know them pretty well. Like, they spend time with that person, understand exactly how they tick, right? And then you can make a meaningful gift towards them. And I think that's what we see in the holidays anyway. You get the most meaningful gifts, and that's not monetary, that's not anything, from the people who truly know you the best. Like,
exactly. And it's a spiritual axiom that we need to go out into the world and give to others what we most need ourselves.